As COVID-19 vaccine mandates for public employees are being implemented and challenged across the country, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker last week issued orders activating up to 250 members of the state's National Guard to offset potential staffing shortages at the Department of Correction. He said in a statement, quote, "We will take whatever steps are necessary to safely run all correctional facilities," end quote. However, some police officers and the unions that represent them are putting up a fight. The State Police Association of Massachusetts says at least 150 state troopers have either resigned or submitted their paperwork intending to do so because of Governor Baker's August announcement. This is And Another Thing. I'm Dara Kennedy.
And I'm Maya Schwader. The mandate has roiled law enforcement officials across the spectrum. The Massachusetts State Police Union requested that a federal judge block Governor Baker's vaccine mandate until the details could be collectively bargained. The judge has denied that request. Corrections officers were also unable to get a preliminary injunction, and according to WBUR, more than 40% of that union's members are unvaccinated. And the State Troopers Union says the force may also lose members because of this requirement. Joining us now is Sergeant Mike Shervin. He is the president of the State Police Association of Massachusetts. Thank you so much for being here, Sergeant. Have you heard from Governor Baker what might happen to troopers who remain unvaccinated?
No, and that's part of our problem here, Myers. We've tried to comply with the orders. We've been receiving multiple dates and orders to submit our attestation forms. Our troopers have submitted their religious exemptions. They've submitted their medical exemption requests, and now they lay in the lurch waiting to see if they're going to have a job tomorrow. Our fear here is that we have some legitimate concerns of medical reasons that they should not get the shot, and if that is granted, will we be receiving a reasonable accommodation for them so they can wear a mask and have weekly testing, or are they going to fire them? And that was supposed to happen at the beginning of the week, and we have heard nothing.
Let's dive into that. What are those medical concerns? Sergeant, do we have you?
Yep, you have me. Did I lose you?
We were wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on what those medical concerns are that you mentioned.
Absolutely. Sorry, I must have a bad connection. So one of the troopers that I spoke with had, he went to go get the shot and realized that he had an anaphylactic reaction to it. So his doctor will not let him get the second shot. And as a result, he has a letter from the doctor saying you cannot get it. So we've submitted, or he has submitted, medical documentation providing that he cannot get it. So that is one. We know that there's another trooper that had received a Bell's palsy type of a reaction to the shot. So these are legitimate medical diagnoses and should be excluded. However, again, we don't know if they're going to be excluded and if they're going to be given a reasonable alternative. How can we turn to a 15-year trooper who's had no disciplinary history, who's been an exemplary employee of the state, and tell them, hey, just because your body rejected the shot, we are now going to terminate you. We have no use for you anymore. And that's fundamentally unfair. And that's why SPAM is standing up and trying to fight for its members.
On the flip side, are there troopers who might voluntarily leave the force over this?
There are. So we had a bunch this past Friday, a bunch that some of them were eligible for retirement age, just up and retired. We had a bunch that were not eligible for retirement that resigned ahead of the mandate. And we have, I think it's approximately 200 waiting to hear from the department on whether or not they're going to be granted their religious and or medical exemption. And then again, whether they'll be receiving a reasonable alternative. So we still could have 200 troopers that are going to be unemployed in a week, 2 weeks, but we just don't know when that's going to be.
Did your union at all see this coming? Were you anticipating that this mandate was going to happen and might be a problem?
No, in fact, quite the opposite. In speaking with the command staff, we expected it to fall in line with what the federal mandate was at the time, that you would have the alternative to wear a mask and get regular testing. This is not about being anti-vax. I'm vaccinated. My entire executive board is vaccinated. We believe in the vaccination, but we also understand that people have certain religious and medical beliefs. So we firmly believe that we would have a way around this. And we worked through the pandemic on the front lines, and we didn't have any issues. We were really taken back by this.
Sergeant Michael Shervin is the president of the State Police Association of Massachusetts. Thank you so much for joining us on And Another Thing.
Thank you. Have a good night.
According to an NPR report this week, more than 20 states have implemented some form of vaccine mandate for state employees, and many major municipalities have put them in place as well. In a town of roughly 18,000, the Franklin County Sheriff's Department in Greenfield, Massachusetts, has over 250 employees on record as of last year and will also need to comply with Governor Baker's rules. Sheriff Chris Donnellan joins us now. Sheriff, thank you so much for joining the show. Are your employees resisting the vaccine mandate?
No, not at all.
Did you anticipate that there would be any issues once Governor Baker said that this is what must happen for all state employees?
I anticipated some issues, but I was very happy back in January when first responders and public safety employees were allowed to have access to the vaccine. We had an 85% vaccination rate among our staff to begin with. So the staff was very good about this back in January. And when the governor announced the mandate, we just continued the conversation with them to try to get the rest on board.
You've seen the news reports that are happening around the country. And even in our region, there's pushback from law enforcement departments not to get the vaccine. Why has the Franklin County Sheriff's Department been so compliant?
Well, I think it's a lot of things. I mean, we have a public health model in our treatment program at the House of Correction. So I think there's a lot of confidence with my staff as far as the medical expertise we have there. When the vaccine first came out, we had medical experts come and talk with the staff to educate them and answer their questions about the vaccine. So I think all in all, as a community, we felt we had an obligation to ourselves and each other to keep our families and the incarcerated population in the community safe. And they stepped up and met the challenge.
Do you have any employees that are putting in for the exemption for the waiver?
We have four employees that had approved waivers. Everyone else received the vaccine.
And it's up to you, right, to determine whether those waivers, the exemptions, are legitimate. How do you go about that?
Well, we had some help from our attorney to draft up forms. But the bottom line was if someone could come to us with a legitimate religious or medical concern. And, you know, we had probably initially about 12 people come to us with a religious waiver. And the form that they had to fill out required a statement and a signature from their pastor of their church. And when we required that, most of them threw their waiver forms away and got the vaccine because they hadn't been attending a church. And they were just trying to use that as an excuse not to get vaccinated. When we got letters from pastors with legitimate concerns and we got notes from doctors with legitimate concerns, we accepted those.
That's interesting that you said they may have just wanted to get out of getting the vaccine. Why do you think that is? Have you had conversations with them as to why to get out of getting the vaccine?
Yeah, I have. And the few officers that really fell into that category, it wasn't an overriding political issue or a really strong feeling other than the fact that they feel that they're strong, healthy, young people, and they don't need it. And we just over time convinced them that it isn't just about them. It's about the oath they took to protect the public. It's about protecting their family members, their spouses, their parents and grandparents. And they finally saw that and took the vaccine.
We also know that one of the fallbacks that the state is pushing, that if you don't get the vaccine, then you could lose your job. Was there any fear amongst employees of being terminated?
There may have been. I mean, I made it very clear that what the governor's deadline was. I made it very clear to everybody each time a court ruled in the governor's favor as far as being able to mandate the vaccine. I put another posting up. I told my employees where they could find those newspaper articles to read what the courts were saying. And a few of them waited right till the wire and, you know, to see if we were going to back down or not. And we didn't. And they were vaccinated.
It is such a small community there. Like I said, about 18,000 in the entire town. What's the message that you are trying to send to the community as you lead by example with your team that is almost all vaccinated?
Yeah, it's that this is not just about us. This is about the community. This is about the oath that we take to protect the community. As public safety employees, I think we're obligated to do all that we can to preserve people's health and well-being. And that's the example we set.
Franklin County Sheriff Chris Donnellan, thank you so much for joining us on And Another Thing.
Great. Thank you.
After the break, those that are exempt from vaccine mandates may be safe from repercussions, but how are those exemptions determined? Also, an attorney from the ACLU joins us. You're listening to And Another Thing. Stay with us. You're listening to And Another Thing on New England Public Media. I'm Dara Kennedy. Vaccine mandates continue to be debated as individual rights are legally questioned. We now aim our discussion toward the laws that haven't been quite so clear.
I'm Maya Schwader. The American Civil Liberties Union has weighed in on the question of vaccine mandates, and you might be surprised to learn what their official position is. In a statement, the union said that mandates do not violate civil liberties in most circumstances, and that vaccination is a crucial part of protecting vulnerable populations. To dive more into this, we're joined now by Jesse Rossman, a staff attorney for the ACLU of Massachusetts. Thank you so much for joining us. So earlier in the show, we were speaking about the Corrections Officers Union attempting to get a judge to stop Governor Baker's vaccine mandate. You helped write a legal brief on behalf of public health experts in that lawsuit. Tell us what that brief said.
Sure. So as you mentioned, our brief was on behalf of public health experts in the Commonwealth, as well as Prisoners Legal Services. And our brief focused on the balance of interest and the public interest, which public health experts agree weigh heavily in favor of requiring staff members to get vaccinated when they're working in correctional facilities like jails and prisons here in Massachusetts. And there are really two reasons why the public interest weighs heavily in favor of requiring a vaccine for correctional officers. The first is that COVID-19 poses an especial risk to people who are in jails and prisons, what our state Supreme Court has called unique, potentially deadly consequences of COVID-19 for people who live in jails and prisons. And for that reason, the CDC itself has recognized that congregate environments like jails and prisons greatly increase the chance of spread for COVID-19. The second related then reason is that vaccines are necessary to protect people who are incarcerated in these kinds of congregate facilities, and that mitigation efforts on their own simply don't do enough to protect people who are held in jails and prisons.
So then where does individual choice come into this? If someone just genuinely doesn't want to do this, how does that factor in?
You know, again, we were submitting an amicus brief on behalf of these public health experts, and the science there is pretty clear in terms of the impact that it can have when you have staff members who are not vaccinated who are coming into the congregate facilities. The CDC's most recent weekly morbidity and mortality reports have recognized not only that vaccines are the most important strategy to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in our jails and prisons, but also that the vaccines of staff members are especially important because they are the people who are coming in and out of the facilities on a daily basis, and as a result can be bringing in anything from the outside into the facilities themselves. And we've seen that in scientific studies across the country in terms of how staff members can often be the vector that are bringing COVID-19 into the facilities. Just recently, the CDC put out a study about a Texas Bureau of Prisons facility where even though around 80% of the incarcerated population themselves were vaccinated, 74% of the people who were held in two of the units ended up becoming infected with COVID-19 at a facility where nearly 2/3 of the staff members were unvaccinated. It's really important that people who are involuntarily interacting with staff members in a congregate facility have as many protections as possible. And that includes making sure that staff members are vaccinated.
That is an alarmingly high infection rate. So if one of these mandates does not go through, and if, for instance, corrections officers are not mandated to get vaccines, are there other ways to keep COVID out of prisons and jails?
Well, look, we know that there are a number of different mitigation efforts that can be important components of a COVID-19 policy, and that includes not just mask mandates, but also routine testing on a regular basis, both of incarcerated people and of staff. But at the end of the day, those mitigation measures, while important, are not the same as prevention measures of preventing COVID-19 from coming into the facility in the first place. And that really, the vaccine there is the gold standard. That's particularly important as we're seeing Delta variant, obviously, which is so much more contagious, and other variants that may crop up. For individuals who are involuntarily being held in these facilities, the vaccine really is a gold standard for those staff members who they're interacting with, again, involuntarily on a regular basis, and who are the primary vector of coming in and out of the facility on a daily basis.
Really quickly, is there a legal precedent for mandating vaccines like this, especially vaccines that are very new?
Well, certainly we know that there have been, if we step away from the COVID-19 pandemic for a moment, there are vaccine mandates that exist with respect mm-hmm. to schools, healthcare workforces, and other congregate environments on a regular basis.
Right.
And right now, we need to follow the science. And what the public health experts are telling us is that this is really a critical component mm-hmm. of protecting incarcerated people from COVID-19.
Great. Jesse Rossman is a staff attorney for the ACLU of Massachusetts. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Back in mid-December of last year, the United States had surpassed 300,000 coronavirus cases. During the same time, the first vaccine shots were being administered, with the urging to Americans to go get vaccinated unless you were exempt. We are now joined by Jennifer Taub, professor of law at Western New England University School of Law in Springfield. Professor Taub, welcome to And Another Thing. Thank you for joining us. What does being exempt mean?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. So, good question. Being exempt comes right from Governor Baker's order that he put out this summer, letting people know that he was going to require all of the Commonwealth's executive department employees to get vaccinated by October 17th. But built in, by the way, we should just note that almost, 96% of employees have complied. But built into that executive order was the opportunity to apply for an exemption. And the two types of exemption that you can get is if there is a kind of medical disability that makes you unable to receive the COVID-19 vaccine, or if you are unwilling due to a sincerely held religious belief. And so those were the types of exemptions, and people have known about this order for quite some time, and could have gone ahead and applied. Remember that it came out this summer. It was mid-August when the vaccine requirement was announced. And as you've been talking about, this does include the state police.
So, are there only those two exemptions, medical or religious? Is there no gray area in between?
Those are the two exemptions provided. And, keep in mind, there are some states that have provided no exemptions. And this tracks, for going to school when kids have to get vaccines. There are some states that provide, I think it's like 44 of the 50 states for those school age vaccines. There's a religious exemption, or some states provide a religious plus kind of moral exemption to opt out of those. But not all states provide, you know, exemptions there. And in this case, not all states, you know, some states are mandating that all estate employees get the vaccine and not providing a religious exemption. And just yesterday, the Supreme Court refused to stop one of those from going into effect and said, come back to us after you've fully litigated this. So, you know, employees in Massachusetts are fortunate that they have these two exemptions they can apply for.
We also hear about the philosophical opposition to vaccine mandates. As we saw in last week's court rulings denying injunctions against the Massachusetts mandate, the judge ruled that the courts have already established that it is not a fundamental right to refuse a vaccination. As a professor of law, what do you see is the right balance between personal rights and then public health?
Well, I think that, you know, it's similar to, you know, how do I put it? When you talk about, we're looking in particular at the police department, right? Their motto is to protect all, or their pledge on their own website is to protect all residents and visitors to the Commonwealth. The police are here for public safety and to enforce the law. And, you know, more people died in Massachusetts since the beginning of the pandemic from COVID than have died from homicides. This is a very, very deadly virus. And so I don't think that a police officer should be themselves subjecting, you know, I don't want them to get sick and die. And I certainly don't want them to make anyone in the public sick. And here's the extra thing when you're talking about public servants like the police, for example, in particular. If we're reaching out to a police officer, or if we have a violent crime, or we're worried about some other kind of crime, you should be able to ask the police for help without being afraid that they could make you sick, and they could maybe, you know, make you sick, or even make you or a family member die. You know, so they have a special duty as public servants to protect the public, I believe.
Do you think that we're going to see more cases from individuals, lawsuits challenging these state mandates?
Well, individuals, you know, there is, I guess there's two different types of things. If you're an employee of the state, right, and then there's different people who work at private businesses. But I think these lawsuits are going to fail. I think this mandate is going to be upheld. And people should bring lawsuits if they want to. But I personally think, you know, it's their duty as a public servant to follow the law. And the executive order is the law.
Jennifer Taub, professor of law at the Western New England University School of Law in Springfield. Thank you for your insight on this topic and joining And Another Thing.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here for And Another Thing. The conversation does not end here. It continues on Facebook and Twitter. You can find us at AAT on NEPM.
You can also check out our page, And Another Thing, at nepm.org for more episodes. I'm Dara Kennedy. Please join us tomorrow. Have a good evening.